Thank you, Paul. And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Heather V. from Oceanside.
I'm going to start my timer just in case. So I'm an alcoholic. My name is Heather. I'd like to start out by saying thank you, Sam, for asking me to do this. Thank you, Janice. That was amazing. You know, between Damon's birthday speech and Janice's 10 minutes, you know, you guys can leave if you want to. It's fine. I think you're good. But seriously, that was beautiful. Thank you so much. And like you were talking about, the Step Zero crew, thank you guys for riding up here. It's the most fun for me is getting in the car and going, having a meeting on the way to the meeting, and then having your meeting, and then having a meeting on the way home from the meeting. It's like, I've heard people talk about this before, how we get to create the fellowship we crave, and I'm getting to do that finally, and I love it. And I also want to say thank you to my sponsor, who is here. I really appreciate you. Just want to encourage, welcome the newcomers and happy birthday to you guys. I would like to encourage you to listen to similarities rather than differences. I know a lot of us come in here and we're just looking for a reason not to be here, looking for a reason to leave, looking for a reason why we don't belong here, that we're not alcoholics. And it's just going to take you a lot longer if you do it that way. So luckily for me, you know, when I got here, I was in enough pain. And I was in enough misery, and I wanted to die, and I just could not keep living the way that I was living. And so luckily for me, I was looking for a reason to be here. I've known I was an alcoholic, too, since I was a kid. You know, but I always thought it was, that's just the way life is. Everybody drinks. And my family definitely, like, was a Hank Jr. song, you know, like, family tradition was all what it was. I just thought that's what it was. But when I got here, and I met you for the first time, and you welcomed me, and I heard the things that I needed to hear. I heard that you felt like I did, and I heard that you drank like I did, and I also felt that you had a new way to be and a new way to feel, and I wanted that, so I kept coming back. You know, it was hard for a while for me to sponsor anyone or want to really talk about this because, you know, everybody usually comes up and they have all these sexy stories about, you know, living on the streets and being in jail and all these kinds of things that, like, going to institutions, and I never got to do any of that. So I have a lot of I nevers because I was really young when I came here. So it was kind of like, do I really belong here? Like, do I have anything to add? Do I have anything to share? But what I've come to realize, so let me tell you, let me back up real quick and say my sobriety date is May 22nd, 1995. Yeah, that sounds like a lot, but when I tell you how much quality sobriety I have, when I've been doing things the way that you've told me to do for the last 24 or some years, it's only been since I lived in San Diego for like the last 5 or 6 years. So I'm still a baby here too. But I'm a sometimes slowly girl. You've heard it, you know, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. That's me, sometimes slowly. But I do have a lot of I nevers, and it's because I was 25 when I got here, and I didn't really have anything to lose. You know, the things that I mostly lost were inside things, you know. So some people refer to people like me as a high-bottom drunk. So if you identify with that, you still belong here if you want to, if you say you do. You know what I mean? You don't have to go to jail. You don't have to go to institutions. You don't have to lose stuff. You can just be ready to be different. And that's what I heard, you know. So let me go ahead and tell you a little bit about how I was and what happened and what I'm like now. So I grew up in an alcoholic family. My dad, I heard, never really wanted kids. So when I came along, I was my mom's for a couple of years, and then when I was old enough to drink, like 2 or 3, my dad became my buddy. Yeah, he thought it was cute, you know, to give beer to the little one because I would spin around in circles and laugh and fall down, and everybody would laugh at that, and it was really cute. I mean, to me, it's kind of horrifying today because I have children, and when I think about that, it doesn't seem really cute. But that's how it was when I was little, and I was my dad's buddy, and my parents were kind of like hippies, and they had lots of parties, and the bathtub was always full of ice and beer, and they would always send me to fetch beers, and I would grab the beers out of the tub and bring them to whoever wanted it, and I would, like, pop it open, and, like, tax, and I would drink it and hand it to whoever, and everybody would laugh, isn't that cute? And so to me, it's like alcohol wasn't taboo. It was just what we did. And as I got older, I think, you know, at the ripe old age of, like, 12, I started seeking it out on my own. And when I went to parties, it was available in my friends' basements, and we were sneaking things out of cabinets and stuff like that. And it was something that became like, I'm doing this, like, I get to do this, you know. And I wasn't ashamed of it in front of my parents, because my parents usually bought us Boone's Farm or whatever for our parties, because it's better to, like, drink at home than it is to be out there drinking. And I guess I could see the logic in that, but to me it was just like, all right. You know, like, I totally had permission. And from the beginning, I really drank for the effect of alcohol. I loved the way it made me feel. I was suddenly taller and prettier and funnier, and everybody liked me, and I liked all of you, and it gave me exactly what I needed. And I'm pretty much just a drunk. I mean, I'm an alcoholic. I didn't really do too many other things, because alcohol gave me what I wanted and what I needed for a really long time. But then I got to college, and I mean, that was, I think I picked this school based on, somebody said it was like in Playboy's top 10 party schools of America or something like that, and I was like, all right, you know, like, I knew that was where I needed to be. And it was far enough away from home that my parents weren't going to drop on me anytime, but it was close enough where I could go home if I wanted to. And I really enjoyed myself in college for a couple of years. Or at least that's how the story goes, and there's some pictures that look like we were having a good time. I don't really remember, but that's a whole other story. It took me 5.5 years to finish that degree. But what it did was, I think it got me here a lot quicker. You know, I got out of school and I started working, and I worked at a bank, and I was in management training, and they were training us to take customers out, and part of that training was taking us to happy hours. And I was always, me and two of my other friends, we were the three musketeers, we were always the first ones there and the last ones there. And I was the kind of drinker that, like, I was proud of myself for, like, drinking the football players under the table, you know what I mean? Like, I had a high tolerance for alcohol, and I had all these stories in my head about why it was okay and why it was pretty great to drink. But then when I turned 25, you know, I still have my job. I went to work every day, and then after work, we went to happy hour, and after happy hour, we went to whatever bar was having whatever party that night, and then I would pass out or run out of money or get kicked out, and then I would wake up, and I would go to work, and I would do the same thing again. It was like just this endless cycle of meaningless drinking and passing out and going to work so I'd have money to do that. And from the outside, from the perspective of my family, my friends, it was like I was functioning, I guess it looked like. And so no one really understood what was really going on inside of me. But, you know, they talk about that incomprehensible demoralization, you know, the things that we do. And I was really good ever since a small age of doing things and not getting caught, or doing things and not really talking about them. And it was before social media, so no one really knew what I was doing. And I would tell a good story to the outside, so it looked like I was an honor student, and I played sports, and I showed up at school, and, you know, and so from the outside, it looked like I had my stuff together. But on the inside, I was dying. I was dying, and I had no purpose and no meaning in my life. And I didn't understand why I kept lit. I'm like, is this what life is for? Is this what life is about? I mean, I wake up, I go to work, I drink, I pass out. I wake up sometimes at my own house. I go to work, I drink, I pass out. And it was like, it just felt empty. and meaningless. And I just couldn't find a way out of that. You know, my friends were getting married, they were having kids, they were buying houses, they were in the paper for doing all kinds of amazing things in the neighborhood, you know, and I didn't even understand how they got to do that. I mean, it did not make any sense to me. And I also started running out of people to hang out with. You know, my stepfather was an alcoholic, and he died from this disease. And I really hated that he was an alcoholic, and I would never be like him, because I was a different kind of alcoholic. I was an alcoholic with a capital A. I was like Good Time Charlie, that kind of alcoholic, and he was a mess. So I had a list of all the things that described my stepfather, and I was never going to do these things. But what happened was, over time, I would do some of those things on the list. So I had to scratch it off the list, and my list got shorter and shorter. You know, the last thing that ended up on my list, or the last thing that was on my list, is that I don't drink alone. And when I turned 25, I was like, why am I not dead yet? And I set out on a path to, like, drink myself to death. And I was doing really good. 20 days in, I was like, what is going on? Like, I can't even do this, you know? But 20 days of the hardest drinking I've ever done in my life, the last night I was out with somebody from work who was actually my mentor. It was kind of an inappropriate relationship, but whatever about that. So we were out really late across the street from where he was staying, which was with somebody else we worked with. And it was the first time in my life that I knew I was too drunk to drive, because I drove drunk a lot. But that night, I just knew I really should not drink and drive. I just should not drive home. But I lived like 30 miles away. So I asked him, can I please stay at your place tonight? And he was like, no, you can't, because they can't know. And I was like, I just need to sleep on the porch or something. Like, I can't drive home. And he was like, you can't. And I was like, wow. So my life means so little that you would let me drive home in this shape. I'm like, all right. So then I got indignant, and I got in my car, and I remember pulling away from the curb. And then I remember being about 2 miles away from my exit on the highway, and I remember a car kind of being, like, tracking with me, and I was like, oh, my God, that's a cop, you know? And then I was like, straighten up, and I got off the exit, and I remember getting off the exit, and then the next thing I remember, I woke up in the morning and, like, looked outside the window, and I saw my car was there. It only had one wheel on the curb, okay, so it was pretty good. But I woke up, and I was like, okay. But then I went and looked, you know, was there anything wrong with the car? Was it wrecked? Was there any blood on it? You know, and thank goodness there was nothing. But I thought to myself, wow, like, it really doesn't matter if you're here, you know? And it was a Sunday when I woke up, and usually on Sundays we went to this country bar, because this is the early 90s and everybody was line dancing, and so every Sunday we went to this country bar to go line dancing, and it was $2, all you can drink, beer or soda, right? You know what I chose, I mean, duh. So, but the problem is I didn't have anybody to go with me. So I pulled out my little black book. For you younger guys, there were these little books, and we used to write with a pen people's names and numbers. Okay, and so I called every single number in that book to see if somebody would come drink with me, because, you know, I don't drink alone because alcoholics do that. And so I called everybody, and half the people were, it was voicemails, and the other half was people like, oh, yeah, hey, hanging out with so-and-so, call you later. And I was like, yeah, yeah, cool, whatever. Because I wasn't going to tell anybody what I was feeling like. I just wanted you to know. And I thought to myself, well, there's these two girls that go to my school who always go to this thing on Sundays. So if I go there and they're there, I'm not really alone, right? Because I know them. And so I won't really be alone. So I took the chance and I went out there, and they were there. And so I paid my $2, and I got my cup, and they filled it with beer, and I saw the girls, and I went over there, and I was like, hey, what's up? And, you know, and they were drinking sodas. I'm like, what are you doing? It's like $2 all you can drink. And they're like, yeah, we don't feel like drinking today. We're just here for the line dance lessons. And I was like, okay. So I drank about half of that beer, which is bizarre because I've never done that before. But I put it down and, you know, we were doing the thing. And then they were ready to leave. And I said, where are you going? And they're like, oh, we're leaving. You know, the lesson's over. And I'm like, $2 all you can drink, you know? And they're like, nah, we're going home. So I was like, okay. So I have a decision to make because if I stay there, that's like the very last thing on my list, right? Drinking alone. So I left because I didn't want to be an alcoholic. And I went home and I was like, what are you doing? You know, like the feeling I had, I just wanted to die. And so I actually made a list. This sounds really corny now, but I made a list of all the different ways that I could kill myself. And I went down and did like a pros and cons list of each one, because I'm a list girl too. And most of them were too messy or too expensive or too painful or too difficult. And I'm just like, oh my God. So speaking of God, I was like, if there is a God, please just let me go to sleep and not wake up. And I went to sleep. And I laid there, you know, and at around 10 or 11 o'clock at night, my phone rang, and it was a friend of mine that I met in, like, third grade at Sunday school. And he was like, what's up, girl? You sound like crap, because I left him a voicemail. And I just started crying. And he came over and picked me up, and we went out to this place that he called his serenity spot by this creek. And I know it sounds sketchy, but here's the thing. He had actually been invited to go to AA from a judge because he got a DUI. And he had heard enough to know that I belonged here. And so he said to me, you know, I have a place where I'm going to take you tomorrow. I'm going to pick you up at 7 o'clock. And I was like, okay. So he came the next day and he picked me up and he took me to a church right around the corner from my house. And we went into the basement of that church. And people there were so welcoming, and they were so kind, and there was this buzz in the room. It felt electric. It was so, it just felt so good. And I really don't remember what you said that night, but what I felt was that you don't have to feel this way anymore if you don't want to. And I believed you. And before I left that night, they gave me a big book, and they told me to read it, and they asked me to come back. And I stayed up that night, and I tried to read the book. But the first few pages in, oh my God, it was like reading the Bible. Like, you know how you read all these these and thous and those, and somebody begat somebody so many years ago, and I just could not even, you know, because it tells us about the history of AA, and I just couldn't even wrap my head around it. But I flipped to the back of the book, and I stayed up all night and I read every single story in the back of that book. And I heard the stories. I heard your stories, what you were like, what happened, and what you're like now. And I knew I belonged here. And I knew there was something here for me. I saw the light in your eyes. I saw that you had a life that was worth living. And I wanted that. And so I kept coming back. And they told me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I think I did like 180 or something like that. I mean, I had this little book. We have books over here too, like a little directory. And I had it in my car. And every day around 7 o'clock, I would flip through the book and I would look where I was in town. And if I was anywhere near a meeting, I would go drive around that area. It was before GPS too, okay? So I would just drive around looking for churches, and I'd see a bunch of people outside drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes, and I'd be like, all right. And I would like pull in, and I'd come in. But here's what I did in the beginning, okay? I went into meetings, and I listened, and I identified, and I took every piece of wisdom that you had to give out to me. And then as soon as the prayer was done, I was out. A couple times, some ladies gave me phone numbers, and I said, thank you. And then I closed my book and walked away, and I never called one of those ladies. And I didn't really keep going back to the same meetings. I just went to meetings. And I didn't do all the things that they suggest that you do. You know, they say, get a sponsor, read the book, get a service commitment. You know, all I did was go to meetings day after day after day, sometimes two and three times a day. And I did get into service, but I got into service at my church or in my neighborhood or with my family. I didn't really get into service with AA until I moved to San Diego. And I would love to tell you that you guys do it better here, but the truth is I have no idea how they do it back there, because all I did was like pop into meetings and pop out, you know? So if I were to go back there today, I'm sure it's maybe just as good as you guys. Probably not, but maybe, you know? But I'm different now. And the experience I have of life now, today, I do have purpose and meaning in my life. And it doesn't even have to be anything fancy or exciting to talk about. You told me what my purpose is. My primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And so that's my purpose. Everything else I do in my life is like icing on this cake that I get to eat now, you know? I mean, I have created, God has created for me beautiful friendships in my life. They have put people in my life that have helped me through so many things. And I can walk through anything today with grace and dignity and with friends. I don't have to do anything alone. And it's been a very long time since I felt hopeless. It's been a very long time since I felt like being here wasn't worth it. You know, I basically grew up in AA, and I'm so grateful that I did. Janice talked about commitments and being part of committees and all kinds of stuff like that. And since I've been in San Diego, I've been working on the San Diego Spring Roundup Committee. I'm blessed now to get started in with the Women's Banquet in North County. I've held service positions at my home groups. And what it's taught me is things that I use in all other parts of my life. I mean, I learned about Robert's Rules of Order, you know, and like how to run meetings. That's helpful in real life. You know, I've learned how to be patient and tolerant and loving when people are different than me or they have different opinions. And I don't have to be right all the time. I can just listen and try to understand people from other perspectives. That was never on my radar before. A couple people mentioned this. You know, when I was out there, I was selfish and self-centered. And it was all about me. And everything that happened was your fault or whatever. But today I can see, by doing these steps, I mean, I can see where I'm at fault and where I can make a new reality for myself just by the way I look at things. And I said that God word a couple times, but let me tell you, when I first went into that room in the downstairs of that church basement and they were talking about God, at first it was a little, here we go, you know, because I was really uncomfortable with that word for a long time. But what they told me was, it's okay. You know, God stands for group of drunks. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. You guys have something, I can get with that. So that you were my God for a long time. And then they said, you're getting a little better. God stands for good orderly directions. And I was like, all right, that sounds pretty good. You know, and you were teaching me some things, and that was working for me for a little while. And then I started seeing people that I started having relationship with and building friendships with, and I saw that you had a relationship with something you called God. That was your higher power. And I believed that you believed in God, and it was working for you. And I was like, all right, I'll believe that you believe in God, you know, and it's working for you. And then eventually I came to a place where there's some people in this room, actually, that did this for me. We went through a workshop on how to go through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I learned so much in that workshop, and I actually came to have my own spiritual awakening and my own understanding of God. And now today when people say God, it's just... I get it. And it's not any particular thing. It's just like whatever it is for you. And all I need to know today is that God is not me. And that's pretty much it. For me, it's like God is love. And when I'm in God's will, I'm in the flow, right? And I'm not fighting with anything or anyone. I'm just flowing. and it feels good. And I'm so grateful to have you all in my life and to be here so that people like me can have a place to go and not only be alive, but have meaning and purpose and help others. And I really appreciate your time and attention and love. And I really hope that if you're new here or coming back here again, that you stay here and found what I found. Because if I had known what my life was going to be like today, 24 some years ago, things would have been a lot easier. You just have to trust, like, stay in the middle, do the things that they tell you to do. Don't wait 20 years to get a sponsor or work the steps or get a service commitment. You don't have to be a sometimes slowly girl or guy, you know? You can do this thing right now. And Holly and Sam, I'm sure, can hook you up with a sponsor if you need one. Or, you know, talk to me after the meeting. I mean, we're rolling deep from North County, so there's a bunch of us here that could help out too. I love you guys, and thank you so much for my sobriety.